Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The National Blast podcast with Keenan Skelly. Join Keenan and guests as they blast you to a place that is certainly not boring, yet still giving you highlights from areas in cyber where key policies and legislation are needed, exist, but aren't enforced, or no one is even talking about it. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. VArmor enables organizations to protect their data, digital assets, and themselves through a complete understanding of all applications and identities and the information relationships between them. Every application, every user, every data element. Learn more at VArmor.com.
Everybody, it's Keenan Skelly, the host of The National Blast, and we are definitely going to have a blast today. I have a rock star guest who is one of my favorite human beings ever, and we're going to talk about some really cool hacker stuff. So I'm going to hand it over to Alyssa Miller, and she's going to tell us a little bit about herself, and then we're going to dig into some hacker stuff.
Cool. Well, hey, thanks for having me on. Alyssa Miller, I am currently the Business Information Security Officer for S&P Global Ratings. God, that's a total mouthful. I can't believe that's how that sounds when I say it, but
Sounds like you're taking over the world with that title. Like I'm literally doing everything.
One organization at a time. I'm a hacker, security researcher. I mean, I've been a hacker all my life. Yeah, I was that kid that took apart all her toys to figure out how they worked. I bought my first computer when I was 12, broke into some online systems, things like that. But I've been in security as a career for the last 15, which it started as a penetration tester. And it's just slowly, as careers often do, kind of progressed up the leadership levels. And now, I find myself directing the security strategy for the ratings division at S&P.
That's so cool.
You know, lots of fun stuff. Keeps me busy, keeps me paid, which is always good.
Getting paid is very important. People always shy away from saying that, that getting paid is important. And I don't understand why. I mean, really, everybody needs to get paid. So,
I mean, look, I'm as idealistic as anybody, but the fact of the matter is I wouldn't be working if I wasn't getting paid.
Right. So. Exactly. It'd be like on a beach somewhere. I'd be in Greece right now. I love Greece.
I have never been, but I will have to try.
Oh my gosh. Definitely. If you do, I recommend the most amazing rooftop bar in Athens that overlooks the Parthenon. And it's a hotel also. It's amazing. I'll put the details in the notes. Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Now suddenly everybody's booking trips to Greece.
Awesome. Okay, so is that all? I mean, I feel like you do a lot more. I see you everywhere, you know, at cons and talking, and yeah, I feel like you do a lot more than that.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I refer to myself sometimes as a security advocate. That used to be my title, actually, at one time. I do get out. I speak internationally. Have been doing that for a number of years now. God, 7 years. Holy cow. It's been 7 years now that I've been doing public speaking. I'd like to get out into the community, share ideas, you know, tell people what I'm thinking, hear what they're thinking, see what we can do to get better. I guess you could throw author into there as well. I will eventually complete this book. I swear to God, my publisher's probably listening right now. And they're like, you owe us those last two chapters, get it done. Because that's really where I'm at. I'm so close to finish and I'm stuck on these last two chapters, but the book is actually already available in like an electronic preview. And then you get the final thing when it's all edited and done, but you can read it before it's even complete. So, I do a lot of things, I guess. I try to stay active in the security community. Having grown up in kind of hacker culture, security community's got a bit of a special place in my heart. These are my people. This is where I've been my entire life, even long before I realized it could be a career path. So I guess active on Twitter. People can't shut me up on Twitter. They probably love to.
But Twitter is supposed to be Twitter, right?
If you're not talking on Twitter, what the heck, right?
If you're also not shitposting on Twitter, you're not. Are you even on InfoSec Twitter?
I don't think so. I think that's a mandatory. It used to be to get into like the IRC rooms and undernet with all the hackers. You had to, post some hack. You had to build your cred somehow. I think now the new cred is, you have to be shitposting on Twitter.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we've gone downhill, but that's okay. I mean, from that, where you were actually posting hacks too, you just have to be a shit poster now.
Now people are more responsible, I guess, about their how they communicate the details of what they've broken into. I was just reading today the person who wrote up the actually alarmingly easy direct object reference exploit in the DEF CON registration system. So that's fun.
Yeah.
The wonders of third-party vendors. And now you wonder why DEF CON never wanted to do online purchases with credit cards.
Yep.
This is why. Exactly. It's like worst case scenario.
It's so interesting. We, all of us in InfoSec, are presented with these challenges, let's say every day, many times a day, when we're thinking about having a conference, or we're thinking about attending a conference, or we're thinking about going to a speaking event, or, having an online webcast or any of these things. And I feel like the pandemic has really just shoved a big fat wedge right into all of those things that we've been careful about doing, because it forced everyone to get online immediately. We got people jumping into Zooms. We got people like taking over entire conferences. It's kind of crazy, but I also think it really is going to help us in the long run, because we have to get through these things, right? We can't just pretend like the digital world doesn't exist. We got to get better at it.
Yeah. And we're seeing it impact conferences, right? I mean, how many hybrid conferences are happening this year? DEF CON and Black Hat are doing a hybrid.
Yep.
RSA went with a whole new thing. They did virtual this year. They're going back to in-person next year. But they've got this whole new RSA 365 thing.
They're constantly doing content now.
Yeah, it's great. Like, I love to see that, because that's, it makes all of this. I mean, conferences were always about information sharing. And it's just, they were the paradigm we had at the time. But we've got so much more technology now. We should be using it and finding new ways to leverage it. And, certainly what the pandemic taught us is that, the last 5 to 8, 9, maybe even 10 years of technology advancements have really put us where we needed to be. Yeah. I was just telling somebody the other day, I don't think this pandemic hit a few years ago. I don't think we would have been in a position to deal with it the way that we did. I mean, you think, how bad did the U.S. economy or even the global economy suffer through this? How much worse would it have been if we didn't have, the bandwidth that we do, the VPN technologies that we do, the video conferencing technologies that we do.
And even on the medical side, right? I mean, how much further behind would we have been? Because we wouldn't have been able to really use these internet functions that we have, these mobile tracking functions that we have, to be able to really push out vaccinations and, help everybody at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's a touchy subject, but even contact tracing.
Oh, yeah.
Look how many countries leveraged mobile technologies to do contact tracing.
Yeah.
About the privacy issues and whatnot. I get
that's
it.
That's a whole nother episode we can talk about.
But at its core, well-intentioned, I guess, unfortunately, there were many, many issues.
Privacy blips. We'll call them blips.
Blips? Okay. understate the hell out of it.
I'm trying to be delicate so that we can use this literally for another episode.
Who are you? This is not the Keenan. Delicate? That's not the Keenan I know.
You're right. You're right. There were a metric shit ton. And privacy is like, it's all blurry and icky now. And I don't even know.
Sure.
That said, I feel like as a hacker, you have to deal with a lot of shit. Like I can imagine this because I have a lot of hacker friends, including you. And, you know, I get to hear the horror stories of everything that you guys go through in terms of, you know, letting, identifying, companies that they've had a breach, identifying, you know, things out there in the wild and the kind of things that happen after that, you know, when you try to tell a company that there's people in their infrastructure and they're like, no, no, that's not true. That's never, our security is amazing. Please. What's that like for you?
It's weird now because I'm on the other side, which is really strange. Right. So, I mean, you know, but I've been on both sides of it. So I've been, you know, I can think back, boy, would it be 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, when I was working for a very different financial services firm, and we had a security researcher contact us regarding a vulnerability that they had discovered in one of our platforms. And I remember having to talk the CIO off the ledge because he right away was like, we're going to spin up legal. We're going after this person. We're going to call the FBI. We're going to like, and I'm like, wait, whoa, 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 slow down here. We should be thanking this person. Like they've provided us the information rather than using it for evil or, you know, sharing it with people who would use it for evil or making it public. Like they're giving us the opportunity to react to this. You go after them, you're sending all the wrong messages. Now, what's sad is that even today, we see organizations who still react that way, right? I mean, the idea of public disclosure and you disclose something to a company and they act like they're doing you a favor to listen to you.
Yep.
And, you know, and when it comes to things like disclosure, when is this going to be publicly disclosed? They treat it like you should be thankful if they let you disclose it. Like,
right.
Wait, there's nothing to stop me from disclosing this. I'm giving you the opportunity to negotiate with me when we're going to do it because I want to give you time. That write-up I mentioned before about this DEF CON registration site. I can't remember the name of the vendor they were working with now, but you know, it was great. It was wonderful hearing, you know, of course they went through DT and DT was, you know, obviously contacted the vendor and, but you know, everything that I read in this write-up says that, you know, according to Dark Tangent, this company responded immediately and they were very sensitive to the issue, but you don't see that. You see large companies who are very well known. One of them happens to have this symbol of a fruit who I have experience with disclosures to, who, you know, just seem to think that, well, you know, you need to go by their policy and their policy alone. You know, well, our policy says if you disclose something to us, we have 90 days to repair it or 60 days to repair it or whatever.
Right, but that's BS because every single state has a breach notification law. And you've got to be kidding me. Like there's no, just no.
Well, and if you're not paying me, what incentive is there for me to follow your disclosure policy? Now, if you've got a solid bug bounty program, or maybe even not a great one, but you have some type of disclosure policy that includes a propensity for compensation, okay, now you've given me reason to want to follow what you've asked for in terms of responsible disclosure. But, or I shouldn't
even say, with that, even with the bug crowd, you know, kind of folks and the bug bounty and all of that kind of stuff, what ends up happening is you sign NDAs, you sign away your right to publish your hack. You sign away the rights to let other people know that this happened outside of what the company decides to do with that. And right now they're taking 2, 3, 5 years to come out with a breach, you know, notification. And that's unsat. That's why I'm really excited that Senator Warner and others have started to push on this whole breach notification, you know, piece of legislation that they're working on. And I think that what I would really love to see, and I've been talking to a lot of hackers about this, I would really love to see them include protections for hackers in that process. Because what we're talking about right now, you know, we talked about this at the beginning You know, getting paid is important. Having funding to live your life and, you know, take care of your family and whatever. That's what drives everybody to work. If it didn't, nobody would work. So why would we have these hackers continuously trying to help the community and continuously trying to bring these things out if they have no protections and CFSA just continues to, you know, throw them for a loop or throw them to the wolves more appropriately?
Yeah. And that's the thing. And, you know, I mean, and it's an ongoing issue, right? I mean, God, we've known about this. We've had organizations like Disclose.io and Hacking's Not a Crime and others who have been, you know, really trying to create things like Safe Harbor, but without the legal backing of that from legislation, there's plenty of cases that we've seen discussed in the media where hackers went in believing they had safe harbor and still found themselves being threatened with prosecution, getting arrested. I think about our friends from Coal Fire just not too long ago. And you know, the horrible way that that, you know, they got wrapped up in the middle of what ended up being a political grandstand between local and state governments. And, you know, that's frustrating because we should be so much better. We understand more today than we have before the value that hackers have in terms of securing our systems. I mean, we're hiring them in private organizations around the globe. You know, we have large financial services companies in particular who are building, you know, who have built massive pen test teams and things of that nature. So we understand the value, and yet we still, from corporate America's side, don't react well.
No.
Now, to be fair, I will say we do have a certain culture in the hacker community, and I'll go so far as to blame some of it on the bug bounty side of things that isn't helping either, right? Now, I'm not going to say right or wrong, but they definitely aren't helping. Like, I get the frustration because what's been going on from the corporate side has been there for a long time. But for instance, I can tell you stories of hackers who found a vulnerability in a corporate system, contacted the company to disclose it, but then basically held the information hostage and said, unless you pay me X amount, I'm not going to tell you. Well, that's a ransom. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's literally, not right either.
By the definition.
Right. Which I get it. I mean, to me, it's like, okay, there's a certain level, like I can see definitely demanding a signed safe harbor agreement saying you're not going to prosecute me, you're going to release all of that. Yep. I can see asking if you'll pay me to find out. But at the end of the day, standing there demanding payment saying, I'm not going to tell you about this vulnerability, instead, I'm just going to demand payment. If you don't pay me, I won't disclose it to you. I'll just disclose it publicly. That moves into the realms of blackmail.
Absolutely.
And so I don't really like, I think I get why we've gotten there, and it is because organizations have acted so poorly, but that doesn't help us get organizations to react better. That encourages the behaviors that they've been showing. And so I really wish we could move away from that and not have that be the thing. So it's, you know, there's, as always, it's somewhere in the middle. Right. I mean, both sides can argue till we're blue in the face what's right or wrong here. It's somewhere in the middle. But, you know, I think despite all of our frustrations that we've had with corporate America and how they react to vulnerability disclosure, swinging the pendulum the other way isn't going to help matters any. And it's just going to continue to persist this adversarial relationship that's existed.
And create an entire subculture of lawyers who are designed to deal with it, right?
That's the only people who have been successful in all this.
I said that out loud, didn't I?
Yeah, you talked about the lawyers.
So, you know, this is what's really interesting to me about all of the cyber legislation that's being thrown out by, you know, literally everybody right now, because Biden keeps doing the EOs. I saw the one for critical infrastructure today, and it's not as teethy or toothy as I would like it to be. I mean, I think it needs a little more, but it's there, and it gives the next wave of directors, you know, DHS, others, the power to actually build something with teeth. And I think that's a big step forward because it's not something that you always get. The agencies who are spearheading things don't always actually have authority over those things. So I'm happy to see that. But now there are all of these bills coming up. The infrastructure bill kind of pushed everything else out of the way in terms of cybersecurity while they're working on that. And that's understandable. It's a pretty big deal. But as soon as that vote, you know, moves past, we're going to start seeing all those cybersecurity bills coming back because people know that it's important right now. What I'd really love to see from the Breach Act or Breach Notification Act is a balance between, you know, you have this reporting requirement and we as the government, we're not going to go out and tell people about it, but we're going to help you, right? And you don't have to accept our help. But if you fall in these categories, you do have to accept our help, right? If you're talking about critical infrastructure, nuclear power plants, things like that. But the other piece that I think is really important is not just creating some kind of safe harbor, but the exclusions from the CFFA. I say that wrong every time. Blah, blah. Yes. So
it's like HIPAA. Everybody gets it wrong, right?
I know. I'm like, blah, word vomit. Yeah, I think that there's a balance that can be struck with this piece of legislation, and it has to include, you know, maybe not a safe harbor plan, but actual outlines to companies like, hey, you cannot sue the person who told you about the breach. Okay, just categorically, no matter what you think of them, if they're a dark world hacker and, you know, they do drugs and they have pink hair, and no matter what you think of them, because of the corporate culture, you can't sue them. They did everybody a service by bringing this forward. These are the kinds of things I would like to see. What do you think would be like a good balanced line between the two? And definitely now that you've been on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I think you need good definition, right? That's always been the problem with the CFAA is that it's so broadly worded and it's so subject to interpretation that prosecutors over leverage it and other people feel empowered by it. And we never get to a point where it could apply to everything or nothing. And there's no clear direction there. Now we do have some legal precedent, some recent precedent in particular, thankfully, that has started to put some limitations on how broadly that can be interpreted. But I think when we start talking about the idea of safe harbor, it's the same thing. We have to be very clear and provide those guidelines. What is legal informed disclosure as opposed to what is criminal?
Yep.
Now, you know, because you do still have to keep those rails, right? I mean, what you don't want is, you know, somebody finds an ODA in something or they find a vulnerability in someone's site. They leverage it for 6 months and then report it and now expect that they can't get sued or be in trouble. Right. That's a problem, right?
There's always people who are going to exploit the system. And that doesn't mean that you don't have a system. It means that you recognize what those things are.
Yeah. So we have to acknowledge, like, here's the legalities of it. Here's what's required in terms of reporting. Because I'll tell you again, from a corporate side, you know, one of the problems with that, you know, the story I mentioned before of a hacker who comes and says, hey, I found this vulnerability. I'm not going to tell you what it is until you pay me. Well, how can I tell you, A, if it's even truly a vulnerability? How do I know that? B, how do I make sure that, you know, you're going to give me a write-up that provides the necessary level of information that's useful for me? And C, how do I know that it's not a vulnerability I'm not already aware of?
Yeah.
Right? Like, are you going to sit here and tell me about my DMARC record? Piss off. I don't care. Right. I mean, I'm sure I'm well aware of what my DMARCs look like. So, you know, but that happens. And, you know, and so obviously if you're proactive and you have a disclosure policy, you can point to that and you can leverage some of that. But if we're going to codify these things into law, some of that needs to be there. What are the reporting requirements? When do you have to, you know,
and if you have a safe harbor program, if you have something like that, then you have to stick to it, right? If you're willing to publish that out to the world, then when the hacker comes forward and tells you these things, you have to apply those, you know, kind of exemptions for that person.
And that's what I think it's going to come down to, right? I think it's going to come to, I don't even know if it's going to be a hard requirement, but I think whatever it is, it needs to be, in order for the organization to get certain protections,
yes,
they need to publish that policy in a standardized way. Yep. They can adjust it to whatever fits their organization, maybe within, again, some guardrails. And then the flip side is the hackers, the researchers, if you want the protections of not getting sued, you have to, you now know where to find that information. Yep. You have to follow that policy. If you operate outside of that policy, you can be sued. You can be prosecuted, things like that. And that's,
and there's a fine line between hacking and being a criminal, right? And I think that line moves a lot of the time, which is why legislation will help with that, because legislation can be amended fairly quickly and easily, except for apparently the CFAA.
Right. But no, but that's why I say, like, I don't really want to see that requirement turn into is the government saying, this is the requirement for informed disclosure, mm-hmm. right? I don't want them to, because again, those requirements may shift drastically from organization to organization. I think to keep our capitalist society happy, and I think rightfully so, you need to allow the organizations a certain level of being able to define that criteria.
Yeah.
But how they publish that criteria, some guardrails, like you can't, you know, like I honestly think the NDAs have to go away.
Yeah, 100%.
You're not going to encourage people to report this stuff if they can't share it publicly.
Absolutely. It's the culture of the hacker. It's the culture of, hey, I found this thing and I want to make sure that it gets fixed and like the world is better because of it, right?
And that's the thing we have to recognize is the world gets better. We get better in security when we know what mistakes other people made.
Yep.
When, you know, we don't hear about the 17 new ODAs being fixed in some iOS update until the day Apple releases it. And then they give us this, you know, minimalistic.
I think you meant to say banana when banana releases it.
Did I say the name of the fruit company? Oh, well. Hey, everybody knew what I was talking about anyway. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's Apple. It's totally
I
Apple.
I still just got a brand new laptop from them. So, you know.
No, they're just so usable and great.
You know, I mean, it's nice.
Love-hate relationship. It's good.
Yeah, you know, come on. But seriously, I mean, and I could say the same thing for Microsoft, although I don't want to pick on Microsoft because Microsoft has gotten so much better.
Oh my gosh.
Quite honestly, yes. You look at what Microsoft is providing these days in terms of the details of their 0 days when they're fixing them.
Yep.
I mean, it's so much better than we ever got before. And I've been saying this now for a few years, and I'm not alone in this, that Microsoft is light years ahead of Apple when it comes to, you know, how they handle a lot of this.
And I think that level of security that they're really pushing for, you know, when they came out with the idea of trying to build a cyber business unit, everybody, you know, originally was like, really? It's Microsoft. Why would they do that? But in reality, it makes so much sense. It makes perfect sense. And they have they've definitely taken that to the next level of what can we do? What can we do in terms of helping nation states? What can we do in terms of, you know, really making an impact? And I'm there with you. Like Microsoft specifically over the last 15 years has just become a totally different company.
Totally.
And it's nice. It's nice to see that. I mean,
they have IR services now.
I know.
I mean, the Dart team for crying out loud. Oh, like, yes. Seriously.
And
I
missed
mean, and
it.
And we better.
Right? I know.
With, you know, what is it? Some like 85% of corporate your workstations are running Windows.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And everybody's using Active Directory and all this. Well, of course, who better to come in and handle your investigation for you than the people who wrote the stupid stuff? You exactly. know, I mean, come on.
Exactly. It's crazy. I don't know. I get so frustrated when you talk about this because I hear like these wild stories. And I think you and I have had some back and forth on Twitter with literally every hacker who feels the same way about, you know, the injustices that they kind of go through. And I know one individual, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks, who actually was like, hey, here's a breach. Well, how do we know that it's a breach? Okay, well, here I verified that it's a breach. Here's the data that shows you that it was a breach. And then the bad guy, the threat actor, reached out to the company and was like, no, it was totally him. It was totally him. So now the actual threat actor and the company are working together to go against the person who actually found the vulnerability. That just blows my mind. The fact that we have a system that even can possibly allow that. How do you kind of get to those gray spaces when we start talking about legislation, right? I mean, there's a high point of, corporation or company kind of, I'm wordless right now. Accountability. And there's also a level of, the kind of hacker community accountability. And those things are very important. But what's all the stuff in the middle that we're kind of missing that should be talked about, that we should be pushing forward in legislation that we're not? He's like, damn, you got time?
I was going to say, is that like, we're going to go for another hour yet?
we could do this all day and break it up into episodes.
there's so much. And it's, God, I'm always hesitant to push things towards legislation, right? Because I feel like the one challenge with legislation is it always has to be so finite and so granularly defined that it almost becomes problematic in cases where you do need nuance. And we're talking about that gray area between, the accountability of hackers and the accountability of organizations. It's one of those things where, otherwise we end up with things like the CFAA, yep, where there's no, discrete definitions of anything. It's just wide open. And so we don't want that kind of legislation. So I'm always a little shy of that. What I prefer to see, and unfortunately it probably does take a certain level of legislation to make it happen, is more of that public and private sector cooperation, right? It happens in certain
industries. I'm going to challenge you on this one, but go ahead.
Oh, good. Here it goes. And I don't necessarily mean, I don't want private organizations responding in the ways that we do from like DOD, right? That that ship is long since sailed. It doesn't work. Okay. But I think from an information sharing perspective, there's so much more that can be done there than is, from best practices, from some innovative approaches to things. Because on the flip side, you have a lot of arrogance on both sides. You have the arrogance of the DOD that they don't need to listen because, DOD, intelligence community, all of them, they know what's going on in the world. They don't need to listen to what the private sector is doing. Private sector.
Reality, Microsoft's over here like, are you kidding me right now?
Right. And then, who are you calling again for help with that? Yeah, we're
right.
So there is that flow that has to happen. And that's what I mean when I say I'd like to see that. I look at things like, in financial services, we have things like FSMA, where, maybe that's not the ideal. I'm not saying that that's a model we necessarily want to follow. But the fact of the matter is it has been effective in sharing a lot of information across the financial services sector. And, there are lessons to be learned from that we can leverage and how that interaction can work. The problem again comes in when it becomes a new regulation. The minute something's a regulation, it falls apart, and take it from somebody
this is where I'm going to jump in.
Okay. Yeah. Take it from somebody who's in a highly, highly, highly regulated space. Okay. Credit rating authority.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But you want me to rattle off the 138 different regulations?
No. I agree with you to a certain point, but okay. Where I don't agree with you, and I think this is an important distinction, is having done what I did at DHS, I think when it comes to critical infrastructure, there's an entirely different model. I think that if you are a chemical plant and you have crazy explosive chemicals that you're dumping into your backyard that could blow up New Jersey, let's say, You have to be regulated because companies in general, these owner operators, whether and in truth, whether they're critical infrastructure or not, it's all about the bottom line, right? And if you can't pay for that to happen, if you can't find some way to get, you know, all of these issues that you're being faced with, and security issues and privacy issues and physical issues around whatever your thing is, then you're definitely not going to want to like talk about it. You're not going to want to tell people about it. You're not going to want to share that information. You're going to be like, oh shit, we don't have a grasp on this. And we found that in DHS with the chemical, security program is that they didn't want to admit that these things were happening because they weren't being told that they had to. There weren't fines associated with it, but what they were doing was causing damage, right? So I think that a fair amount of teeth is important, but I'm when it comes to regulation, I do believe it has to go both ways, right? So if you're going to make this a regulation, then you need to also provide funding outlets, grant programs, things that can help me achieve these security things without, you know, worrying about whether or not I can keep my business running to do that.
So there's a balance. Don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-regulation by any means. There is certain good to it. In fact, I was probably one of the few people who was actually, I won't say excited, but very interested when, you know, I think it was TSA actually is the one who managed pipelines, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And they came out and they were announcing, you know, that they were finally bringing some teeth to their regulation of pipelines after, you know, of course it had a blow up in, you know, everybody's face with Colonial Pipeline. But so I don't mind that. The only issue, well, there's a couple issues I have with regulation. Again, regulations far too often turn very prescriptive. And when they're overly prescriptive, they become onerous and they become not necessarily the appropriate steps for a particular organization. So what happens?
They don't.
Organizations find the way to do the bare minimum to meet the regulation, and they don't really learn from it and they don't get better. So, you know, I mean, and from somebody who's had to have these conversations, having worked in financial services the vast majority of my career, you know, I've been in that space and have had to coach people like, look, we can't say this because that would be lying.
Yeah.
You know, and so how do you, because people hide shit from regulators or they want to, right?
Oh,
I mean, organizations are going
yes.
to do that because we don't want to get fined. We don't want to be shut down. We don't, you know, I mean, it has.
We can't
that
pay
business.
For the things. We can't pay for the things that we could do to fix that because we're a business. And we're still trying to run a business.
So I think about it kind of like we do with DevSecOps. Ooh, here we go. Now we've taken a really hard right.
Episode three.
Right? But no, so in DevSecOps, we talk about this idea of the paved road, right? How do you make it so the secure way, the path that you want your developers to follow is the easy path?
The path of least resistance, yep.
Right. So when we think about regulations, it needs to be the same. How do we encourage organizations that this is the path they want to follow because it's actually going to drive value for their business?
Yep.
And that's the thing that I have not seen any regulator get right yet.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it always comes down, and again, it's the nature of the way legislation has to be written because the judicial system has ultimately got to interpret it.
Yep.
You know, we're so prescriptive that, you know, it breaks that. It makes it more onerous rather than something that helps. And so that's why I talk about this idea of more of that collaborative approach. You know, we saw CISA try to initiate some of that. Chris Krebs, God love him, you know, had kind of that idealistic view of things. And, you know, that's kind of where he wanted to drive things, whether you agree with his methods or not. You know, his vision, I agree with 100%. And that is, yeah, we need to bring more of this information sharing together. So that's kind of where I sit on that. I'm not against regulation per se. I just think we need to regulate a little differently than we do now.
I actually 100% agree with that. I do believe that when we head in towards you know, regulation, we do tend to be one of the following. A, very squishy on language that can be utilized by lawyers to do bad things. And so crystal, like drilled into one specific thing. And exactly every possible word shall have this, 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 that it's not even functional, right? You're just laughing because of my, you shall.
Oh, I'm laughing because of the whole thing. In fact, I had to bite my tongue not to say the name of a particular organization who's responsible for some of that kind of thing. But stop recording.
No, but these are the kinds of conversations I feel like, you know, Congress is missing out on and CISA is missing out on as they try to interpret these executive orders. When you've been in the system for a long time, and I can speak to this, you know, when I was a DHS, you see things from that perspective, right? You don't necessarily see all the other information. And I think what Chris was really trying to do was, again, open those lines of communication so that the end users can actually come back, the companies can come back and say, okay, this is why we don't want to do this. And this is what you would have to do for us to continue to have this, for us to build trust in what you're trying to do here. And I think you're 100% right that it has to be a different tactic.
We're like 35 minutes in and the word trust just came up.
Oh, shit.
Episode 7. We can't go there, but there's so much more to be said.
Go there today, but seriously, on episode 7.
Yeah, like we've talked all around it, right? I mean, how important trust is. I mean, everything back, throw back to the very beginning of the conversation when we were talking about hackers and organizations and that lack of trust. And yeah, I mean, that there's that as much as anything. Boy, I can apply that to regulatory environments too.
Oh, 100.
When, you know, businesses don't trust their regulators and vice versa, regulation is a mess. When the two trust each other and they can have open, honest conversations without worrying about, you know, how is my regulator going to slap me down? Or, you know, if I come at this way, how is this organization going to lie to me? You know, I mean, that's that lack of trust is very inhibitive. So, yeah.
And that's never, I feel like there's always going to be, no matter what, there's always going to be a level in, you know, enterprises and companies where they're like, okay, I have to do what I have to do to make my business really phenomenal and amazing. And sometimes, and I recognize this as a CEO, sometimes you can't make the decision that you want to make because you just can't, because the bottom line says, no, sorry. So this is where I go back to, I think these regulative forces need to have some kind of funding arm where they can provide grants to those people who simply can't afford to follow regulations because it's a business. And I think that's where that handshake of regulation and incentive come together.
I agree. And I'm a big believer in adding as much carrot as you do stick, right? I mean, that's whether, and again, I can apply that at so many layers when it comes to cybersecurity. But you know, it really is important that we motivate people with more than just fear, because I can go through all the neuroscience studies about how fear doesn't motivate people to action and yada, yada, yada. I mean, that's the reality. It's what we know. If you're going to try to motivate people to take action, there has to be some reward there.
Has to be valuable, right? I mean, we've been talking about information sharing for Jesus, 20 years, right? And information sharing is great, but when you're sharing information to a mid-sized company who has, you know, like 100 people and one IT guy, and he has no idea what external threats are even about, you have to be able to scale that, right? What is it that company is going to need? What carrot are they going to need to help them follow through on this? And we don't really analyze those things.
We don't provide those incentives. We just, you know, sticks and taxi are going to fix the world.
Oh, don't.
Sorry.
No, she didn't.
I did. But no, seriously though. I mean, you're right. It is something. And as witnessed by those two aforementioned, acronyms, we've been trying. We just haven't really looked at the problem in a business context. It always seems to get this either very, very DOD government shade or becomes this very academic exercise. And it never seems to connect with the reality of the business world that you were just describing, in that medium-sized business who knows they have problems, doesn't know how to deal with them, doesn't know, you know, what is appropriate, and oftentimes doesn't know where to find the budget dollars to make something happen.
Absolutely. Yes. This is something that plagues me at night. I want to have just a short podcast actually with Joe Biden and be like, look, when we talk about security, let's talk about a couple of these things, right? Let the hackers hack. That's super important. Also, if we're going to have regulation, how about we put some real teeth behind that with adding grant funding? Because as a business owner, it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, I would agree. And if you get Joe, if you do come and join the podcast, give me a call. Let me know, because I'm coming on with you.
Oh yeah. I think if we have Joe, we're going to have maybe you and a couple of other of our
panel.
Yeah. A panel really to talk about the challenges in cybersecurity, the no shit on the ground challenges in cybersecurity, and why hackers who are really trying to do amazing things are just being, you know, kicked back at every turn, and how important legislation on this really is.
All right. The challenge is out there. Joe, Kamala.
Challenge is out.
Let's go. We're doing this.
We're doing it. I love this. This has been such a great talk. And I feel like if we sat here for even 30 more seconds, we would find a lot of other things to talk about. So you definitely have to come back as a guest. I mean, we're gonna do this again.
I am always game. I mean, to sit and talk to one of my favorite people about one of my favorite topics. Come on. Hello. I'm all over that.
We could probably make this into a totally different podcast where we just talk and bullshit.
I mean, hell, let's live stream that. That could be even more fun.
Definitely. We're going to talk about that offline. So thank you awesome. So much for coming on the show. This has been great. I love this discussion. And, you know, a lot of people keep saying to me, like, you can't keep talking about hacker rights on your show. Like, it's getting, like, people aren't going to like it. And I'm like, I will talk about it every single podcast if I want to talk about it, because all of these changes that the government is trying to make in the cybersecurity world, this is like fundamental. It's one of those basic things that affects everything. So I will talk about it every day and twice on Sunday. And there you go.
Well, and look at the conversation it created. Exactly. I mean, if that isn't evidence of how intertwined it is with everything that we're talking about in the media right now in terms of cybersecurity.
Absolutely.
I don't know what more proof you need. So yeah, keep it up. Let's go. Hacker rights every day.
Hacker rights every day, twice on Sunday.
And hack the planet.
Okay. Thanks again, Alyssa. This has been so amazing. This latest podcast from the National Blast is bringing you legitimately some of the coolest people ever. And hey, at Joe Biden, let's talk, man. I'll bring the people. You show up and let's figure out how to fix some of these security problems by the people who are actually fixing some of these security problems. Thanks again, everybody. The National Blast. Later.
VArmor enables organizations to protect their data, digital assets, and themselves through a complete understanding of all applications and identities and the information relationships between them. Every application, every user, every data element. Learn more at VArmor.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the National Blast Podcast with Keenan Skelly. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.